They want to see the swamp drained. They're like, yes, please drain the damn swamp.
That's the crazy part. He wants to drain the swamp, but then you're part of the swamp and everyone you're affiliated with is part of the swamp. So you are the swamp. So you want to empower the swamp?
He is the swamp. He's protecting the swamp. Mm-hmm. He's redacted the swamp. It's like, it's the most bullshit line. We're taking the world back. We're demonetizing the billionaires by making everything free.
With Bitcoin and with AI, it's going to level the playing field, which is a better future for all people. Welcome back to the Bitcoin Nova. Today, I have Pete with me. Pete is a software developer, programmer, and software engineer. And we actually met recently in Chicago because we are part of this Chicago Bitcoin Collective group. And there is a Bitcoin hub built. It's already happening. It's already there, a restaurant. And we are so excited. So we met there the other day. It's called Fork and Coin. And we were actually there for a live show. It was amazing. And my husband was performing. So it was so great to meet you the other day. So now we are here again for the podcast.
Yeah, it was really nice meeting you too. And yeah, I'll give a little introduction about myself. My name is Peter Rishkevich. Born and raised in Chicago. I'm a software engineer, although I'm trying to popularize the term agentic engineer because I think that's that's where stuff is trending towards. I have a lot more to say about that. I'm sure we'll get into some of that.
You'll have to tell us what that means because for the people that don't know, and I myself don't really know what agentic engineer means.
Yeah, no problem. I will definitely explain it. So yeah, I've been an engineer for roughly 13 years now. Started at Nokia when, you know, they were good. That was a long time ago. Had a long career in and around Chicago, spent some time in the Bay Area. More recently, I've been working at Google, Meta. Those were amazing experiences. And right now I'm a engineer at Venmo, PayPal, and working in outside of their Chicago office.
That's crazy. Okay, so you're working for Venmo, PayPal, and you're engineering software for the company. So do you see being in Bitcoin, how does that feel for you working for a company like Venmo or PayPal? Do you see any sort of connection to Bitcoin happening or?
I mean, I think it's kind of good. They're pushing the frontier of the space in a couple different ways. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously people can disagree about that, but I could just say a few things right off the bat. Like I got their Venmo credit card a couple of years ago when they offered Bitcoin rewards, when Bitcoin rewards was very new at the time. Mm-hmm. Like now, I mean, there's a handful of other credit cards, but I think they were one of the first ones. So that's, again, that's debatable. Like, was that a good thing? It's a credit. But anyways, the point is anything that helps increase the adoption and the storage of Bitcoin, mm-hmm. I'm for that. And the process is going to take a long time for us to like get to full adoption. But I think these little things are helping us get there. So
you
I'm excited.
That's a really great point because I've been thinking lately about, you know, there's a lot of debate about Bitcoin treasury companies even. And, you know, when you think about people paying in Bitcoin and using that as a medium of exchange, it's a cash-based system. It's digital cash, right? So, you know, if people were to use a debit card or just paying cash, they could just use Bitcoin the same way. But there are so many people who are on the credit system and on a debt-based system. So many people are just used to earning their rewards on their credit card, or they just are living sort of even paycheck to paycheck or just having to charge things because they don't have the money currently. So this system of debt is something that, you know, you can't just convert to Bitcoin and say, okay, we're eliminating the debt-based system overnight. So it seems that, if you want to use Bitcoin as payment, great. That's for people that would typically be using cash for payment. But when I heard about Strategy recently, they are looking into Bitcoin lending. Mm-hmm. So that's where I think that Bitcoin Bank comes into play and why they're accumulating so much, because Bitcoin lines of credit, that makes it seem more the way the future would roll towards getting the majority of the population that is on a debt-based system to use Bitcoin in some way. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, that's another part of the evolution of like, how do we go towards the Bitcoin adoption? Because I mean, I really love Michael Saylor. I think he's doing amazing things. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, like, he's a little controversial, but I think in general, he's another force for good for Bitcoin adoption. And I pretty much watch like almost all of his podcasts. Love the guy. He's awesome. And he's just calling out so many great things about how the old system is like kind of stuck in its old way. But he kind of figured out like, hey, here's why the new system is way better. And he's developing these properties, these assets on top of Bitcoin that are basically helping adoption increase even further. And I know like the risk is a lot of people are probably thinking about Celsius, Luna, and all these things because that burned a lot of people, unfortunately. And that left a really bad mark on Bitcoin, cryptocurrency in general. But I still think it's correct in spirit to move towards changing the way that we naturally interact with money and currency towards something that doesn't just depreciate constantly. And I think when you start basing these assets on top of Bitcoin, like in the long term, stuff is going to get more stable. Stuff is going to get better. So yeah, I love what he's doing with the space.
Yeah, he really, I mean, I think people just don't understand the way he thinks, because I think he's thinking on more of a systematic level of how our current system works. And I really just didn't think about that part. I think I've kind of touched on it as far as my thoughts over time with the lending and with the lines of credit, I guess. But just recently, that made so much more sense, because if our system is built that way and so many people use the system that way, then, you know, that's why it makes sense for what he's doing. And maybe companies like yours, PayPal and Venmo, would have, you know, those types of services going forward, especially when you see what's going on in the world right now. And I mean, it just feels like as a Bitcoiner, when you've understood what's wrong with the money system, with the fiat system, we felt like we've been on the verge of this catastrophe, you know, this house of cards kind of falling, which I feel like it's been like that for a while. And I know that it won't. I feel like the system is, it's not like it's just going to collapse, but it's very scary to see what's going on when it comes to wars and when it comes to inflation. The national debt was under $30 trillion. Mm-hmm. And we're on the path to add about $1 trillion. God, what was it? I think $1 trillion a year. So in the next 4 years, it'll be another $4 trillion, if I'm right. And then it's supposed to double in maybe, I don't know, in the next 20 years or something, or less. I think it was less. So yeah, fact check me on that. I'm not sure of the numbers, but it's crazy to think that that's not even including the interest we pay on this debt. So right. It just seems like, and especially with the wars going on and this situation with the oil, it seems like it's this financial war and we're on the verge of, you know, things changing massively.
Yes, things are changing drastically. Mm-hmm. And I think the dollar, I think this is the early stages of the end of it, because, I mean, I just heard a recent news article. They're printing $1 billion every day to fund this new war that Congress has not even acknowledged. It's kind of an illegal war. That's another topic. Anyways, right. I mean, some fun facts there. We haven't declared war since World War II. Cold War, Vietnam, all of that is somewhat gray area. So anyways, but the dollar, in order to fund these wars, you need money. And the easiest way to make money is just turning the printers on. Or these days, it's not even a printer, just clicking a button. And then the money just diffuses throughout the system. And the big problem with that is it causes something called the Cantillon effect, where the people who are closest to those money spigots are the best beneficiaries, the biggest beneficiaries. So that's how you get these systems that are now too big to fail. All these big banks, they have so much, they take so much money so cheaply from the Federal Reserve that you cannot, if you start to tinker with that, like the whole system just starts to fracture. Yeah, we built a fragile system because the dollar is not tied to any physical entity. They've been trying to tie it to oil, the petrodollar. I think Nixon took us off the gold standard in the 70s. And they tried to enforce trade of oil in the US dollar. So that creates demand for the dollar, but it's an artificial demand. And who knows, maybe that's probably why we're in Iran right now, to try to reinforce the trading of the asset in the US dollar. I mean, it's
just wild. I mean, just thinking about how, you know, there's this policy of, hey, we're going to tariff all these countries and show them who's boss because we're the US. And then now the US is asking for aid from the same countries they tariff. And it's just a crazy world we're living in. It just, I mean, people are just turning their backs, and it makes sense. You know, it's like you are supposed to, you know, be diplomatic. And I think that people are realizing, especially when it comes to a lot of the truth that's been coming out, you know, nobody trusts, you know, especially when you had campaigns on no more wars and, you know, we are not going to, I'm the president of peace type of stuff. And then you have this massive war. You're not even acknowledging the strike that happened on that school kind of thing with the children. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, you know, people are, they realize the reason this war really started. It's a distraction. I mean, it's bigger than that. I don't think it's only a distraction. But it's pretty well known that people are seeing through the veil. You know, they're actually realizing that it is a distraction from the files, you know, from what's going on in those files. And it's I kind of love how the internet is not going to give that up. It's not the normally they think this microwave mentality of the internet where people just forget a week or two later. So they're used to just being able to distract people away from, you know, things that are peeking through. But it doesn't seem like people are letting this go, and I'm so happy about that.
Yes. I mean, this is like Trump's playbook.
Altair Mining, an American Bitcoin mining company, making mining equipment simple and accessible. They've got everything from the newest at-home lottery miner, the Nerd QX, to powerful Bitcoin ant miners, plus everything you need to get started. All the accessories you need, support, consulting, troubleshooting, and maintenance. If you're curious about mining or upgrading your setup, check them out with the link below. It's never too late to learn about mining, and Altair Tech is here to help you every step.
I mean, yeah. I kind of figured this out like in 2016, where I'm just like, guys, he's just saying insane things to piss people off, to distract you from the previous insane things.
Yeah.
Like, such a, like a weird smokescreen that, I mean, he's the most effective implementer of this in history, probably. It got him the second election. I mean, don't get me started about the transfer of power that he denied in 2020. Like, that's a whole other topic.
Right.
Anyways.
There's so much.
Oh my God. So many red flags. Ugh.
But he is really a master of illusion and distraction, because when you think about, I mean, so many of the people in my real life, and I see a lot of new people constantly in my line of work, we're always having conversations and I get to hear a lot of people's thoughts. And it's very interesting to see that the group of people that are the most gullible are, you know, the people that are manipulated by social media, and they think videos they're seeing on the internet are real. And it's usually an older group of people. And it's kind of sad, because the same people that believe everything that Trump says, mm-hmm. they're the same people that ask me how to use their iPhone and how to help them do something on their iPhone. And is this video real that they saw? And it's not. And so it's like, so you believe a lot of the stuff that is obviously fake, but then when it's the stuff that people should question, they think, no, without question, I'm gonna right. believe this. So yeah, he's very good at having this confidence level that he has, and people just buy it, you know. And it's a very us versus them type thing, and it's just crazy how I think people are starting to wake up to that. There's been so many right. people who were blindly following what the goal was of this administration. And after seeing what's been happening recently, more people are waking up.
Yes, the cracks are showing. I mean, the thing is, I'm trying to be charitable to Americans. Like, I used to be irritated, like, why are people voting for this guy? But now, like, I think somebody on YouTube, like, mentioned, you know what? The charitable position is that most Americans feel underrepresented. They feel, why is the cost of everything going up? Why can't I find a job? Why can't I afford a house? And Trump just zeroed in on those people and was like, I'm going to fix all this. And they just bought it hook, line, and sinker. I mean, it's not their fault. Like, they want out of the system. The system is so broken. And when you have a politician claiming he's going to fix it, and that could be people's only hope. So I'm like, I don't want to blame people for voting for him. He's just, like, I hate saying positive things about him, but how did he become president? He's the one of the most damn charismatic people. Like, I hate that.
I know.
Because it's like, the effect is so
cool. Well, it's like, weird, because reality feels like a reality show these days.
Yeah.
So, and I think people are so addicted to, you know, reality TV. And it's just kind of like, if Trump weren't president, they would be so bored. And they'd almost feel like, oh no, what do we do now? So they just kind of wanted a TV. I hate to think of it like that, but it's like,
they want to see the swamp drained. They're like, yes, please drain the damn swamp.
Well,
like,
that's the crazy part. It's like, he wants to drain the swamp. And that was another thing. I'm going to drain the swamp. But then you're part of the swamp, and everyone you're affiliated with is part of the swamp. So you want to power the swamp?
Literally, he is the swamp. He's protecting the swamp. Mm-hmm. He's redacted the swamp. It's like, you can't. It's the most bullshit line.
Like, oh my God.
And history is going to look at this and be like, wow, this was hilariously terrible. Anyways.
Did you even see, this was hilarious, but the statue that was placed near the White House, I forget what that area is called, but there was a statue of like the Titanic and Trump and Epstein in the front of the ship.
Oh my God. Yeah, I think I saw a meme about that. It's, oh my God.
I mean, people are just making art about this and I mean, putting it in front of the White House. And it's, I mean, it is like reality TV. It's crazier than reality TV. I wasn't one much to watch, you know, the news lately, but just, I feel like you have to lately. I think people that have stayed away, it kind of reminds you of COVID. You know, COVID, it's one of those times where people weren't watching the news much, but then so much stuff was going on in the world that people were just hooked to their phones again and trying to figure out what's going on. And it feels like a similar situation. And during that situation, during COVID, a lot of people woke up to a lot of lies and manipulation and censorship.
Yes.
And they, like myself, I was one of those people who found Bitcoin during that time. Because I was tired of being manipulated and I wanted to find, you know, some basis of truth, something that that made sense. And that was Bitcoin. And now that it's happening again, it seems like, again, history repeating, you're bringing in a new wave of people looking for truth and also opting out of institutions that empower the most evil people.
Yeah, it's insane. Like, I mean, this is the COVID was one of the things that, like, thankfully, like, it shook Michael Saylor awake. He's like, why is Main Street going bankrupt? Everybody's losing their jobs. And yet Wall Street is on a tear, getting just crazy loans, small bit like big loans, all these. And it's just like the people in charge don't want to, like, I mean, their friend, they don't want to let their friends go, you know, they want to keep enriching their friends who are on Wall Street and all these things. And it's like, it became so clear to him that he's just like, all right, we need to figure out a way to like fix this unfair system.
Yeah.
Because like this is not going to last if this keeps happening. And he discovered, you know, Bitcoin, it kind of solves these problems. It's an asset that's, it's outside of the control of any government, outside of the control of any individual. You can't stop it. Everybody needs it. It's censorship proof. It's resistant to outside forces. I mean, it's such a powerful system. And it's like,
do you have, because I've heard some people, you know, because this is sort of bringing about this time that we're living in is bringing about some religious talk and stuff like that. And I think a lot more people that I've heard, bigger channels like Tucker Carlson, for example, I've heard an episode about him speaking about, you know, AI and how that could be in like almost like a religious kind of ending sort of idea. But I think people have the wrong idea about Bitcoin. And I myself, because Bitcoin is different, because Bitcoin is censorship resistant, like you said. And there's this idea that Bitcoin is kind of tied in with technology being almost like to bring about the end of times or this universal currency that, you know, the idea of you can no longer buy or sell or like, you know, the mark of the beast type of talk. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, but my idea, first of all, you go. I'll let you go before I say what I think I have to say, if you have any thoughts.
No, that's interesting. I mean, I think it's not going to bring about the end of times. I think it's going to bring about the abundance of times. Like, I think everything is going to get so much better once Bitcoin gets more adopted. AI is going to accelerate that process. And I think one big factor there is, I mean, it's ironic because AI is feeding more of itself. All these companies laying off engineers are about to learn a really hard lesson that you're introducing a lot of competition to the market now. There's now tens of thousands of unemployed engineers who have decent severance, like they're going to be paid for another 4 or 6 months, depending. And they're going to spend that time building things and experimenting and obviously trying to find a new paycheck. But I suspect a lot of people are going to find brand new ways to disrupt the system in a positive way. Like, I'll comment a little bit about Block and Jack Dorsey. That's a big missed opportunity, man. Like, if he ever hears this, I'm just like, Bitcoin is so underdeveloped. We need to build so much more application layer tools with Bitcoin and protocol layer tools.
What do you think he's missing?
Well, I think he's banking on the fact that AI is able to replace people. Whereas I actually wrote an article about this. My thesis is right now, like the short to medium term, it's more going to enable people. It's going to enhance people. It's going to amplify people. And I mean, the evidence is kind of clear in that you look at the AI native companies, look at Anthropic, OpenAI, Cursor, all these companies, they're making so much more money than the legacy counterparts. I mean, when you start something that has no red tape, that you're going at 1,000 miles an hour and everybody else is going in the slow lane, like, we're going to see some serious disruption over the next few years. And like the companies that lay off their human resources, their people who build these things, like, you're laying off the builders, the people at the ground floor who are like laying the bricks. Yesterday, they laid bricks one at a time. Today, we could lay bricks 1,000 at a time. Why would you lay these people off? Like, I don't understand the concept. But
yeah,
in my article, I actually mentioned, like, if Jack somehow hears this, like, my suggestion is you should rehire those folks, talk, have a deep discussion or even set of discussions with AI for a couple of days or a couple of weeks, however long it takes. Figure out what are the most impactful products you can make that align with Block, which is essentially that align with Bitcoin. There's so many products waiting to be developed and designed and tested that with all those people, those 4,000 people, you can literally split them up into 100 different projects. And if a handful of those become unicorns, I mean, you can easily 10x or 100x your company. Like, it just,
yeah,
I don't understand. Like,
well, because you're right. If he lays off all those employees, then you're laying off the creativity layer of what could be built. That's just more the automation layer of productivity.
Right. I mean, you still need the people. So this kind of brings me back to, like, what is an agentic engineer? So, like, up until now, like, software engineer was kind of the term for people who wrote code. But now that's kind of not as relevant anymore these days. I mean, we still will need to read code, understand code, and fix code with our own eyes. That's not going away. But what I'm arguing for is the natural way of producing the code is no longer efficient. Now, I mean, it's funny. I was talking with somebody, like, somebody commented on one of my articles. It's kind of like, it's equivalent to, like, would you code a computer program using punch cards? They used to do that. Would you code in assembly? You can. Mm-hmm. That's how we got Roller Coaster Tycoon, which is fantastic. But it's still like, this is not, now you can make Roller Coaster Tycoon with a prompt and it's freaking insane. So it's like, people have made like so many amazing things. And I'm just like, if people could direct their energy and focus more towards the impactful and productive things, like, that's what I'm excited for. Mm-hmm. Like, I think these next few years are going to be amazing.
Yeah, that's true. And yeah, I think it's going to be such a shift. And that's why having people that could utilize the AI and actually be able to increase their productivity and increase their creativity and get things done faster than they would have, that's it's going to be so powerful. I mean, we are on the verge of something that humanity's never seen. So it is an exciting time. It's also just, you know, that's why I think as much craziness as there is, it's just kind of this temporary, like, the system freaking out about change. And people are trying to just figure out how to stay on top and stay in power. But I think that this new way forward is going to, again, with Bitcoin and, you know, with AI, I think it's going to level the playing field so much. So I think the people that are so used to being on top with the Cantillon effect are, you know, those people that are creating chaos and creating distraction and trying to, you know, kind of like climb to the top throughout this. But I think that things are just leveling out for people. And that's how the future will look, which is a better future for all people.
Right.
I think to the argument about, like, or the question I had about, you know, this kind of like future people that are afraid of Bitcoin and things like that and don't agree with it because they think it represents something biblical in a bad way. My thought or argument on that is that Bitcoin is freedom money, is money you could use freely. You have free will, and that is on the side of good and truth. And then you have things like CBDCs with where it's, you know, control and it's manipulation and it's continued. It could be like the fiat system just in a digital form where inflation is going to continue. You know, it's not going to fix the problem of fiat. It's just going to be a digital version of fiat, which we kind of already have anyway. But I think that it will be kind of that idea of digital IDs and currency that you can spend where it's programmed to allow you to spend it and when. So those are the things that I think when you cannot buy or sell those ideas that are, you know, in Bibles and things, it is the idea that anything that is against free will, I think, is the dangerous thing. Anything that's against truth and isn't transparent is a bad thing. So I think my argument would be for anyone who has that frame of thought and sees the world changing, but they're still scared of Bitcoin, thinking that it could be some, you know, bad thing for the future, is freedom money. So that's what I just kind of want to remind people, or anyone who thinks that, yes, you know, definitely, they know what Bitcoin is.
Definitely. And I have a lot of reason to think Bitcoin is going to be the spark that ignites the free and open web. Do you know who Cory Doctorow is? He's awesome. If you like, look him up on YouTube. He's so freaking smart. Mm-hmm. He basically popularized the term enshittification, which you might have heard of. Like, I'm sure a lot of people heard of this, where platforms just tend to decay over time because once they capture as many people as they can, now their incentive is no longer to capture more people. Their incentive is to maximize profits. So the quality of the system for everybody goes down, but the profits for the shareholders goes up. And that leads to all these systems that the incentives are misaligned, where, you know, it might be Mark Zuckerberg's incentive to get people more hooked on Reels or TikTok to get people more hooked on scrolling. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, all these things, you know, I don't think it's healthy for us being so chronically online, but when the money incentive is there, they're going to jack it up to 11. Like, there's going to, I mean, granted, I've learned a lot of things from like YouTube and social media. Like, I can't fully knock it, but like, I don't know. We just need, I mean, obviously some of the responsibility is on us. We need to recognize, hey, I've been watching YouTube for 3 hours. I need to stop. Yeah. But like, it's hard to do that when, you know, the next thing autoplays and you're like, damn, that's interesting. I want to keep watching.
I know. It's like, it sucks you in. It really does. And I think that's why, like, even with everything going on now, normally I haven't been paying much attention. And every time I'm away for too long, I'm thinking, what's changed? Because so much is changing constantly day to day as far as the war drama. And it's not just war drama, like it's fake. This is real life. And my God, it break the cycle of that lately. You know, I feel like I've been less productive because I'm drawn in, you know, and I'm trying to, you know, touch grass, or, you know, that saying, you know, I'm trying to, you know, I have my kids, I have my husband. So luckily, you know, when they're around, I make sure to give them my time. But it's kind of hard because when I know that I could be doing things, you know, for the podcast, you know, on my days off when I have my free time, I'm drawn into the drama. And like, it isn't just the drama. It's people's real lives, and people are that where everyone's using unalive, because I guess when you use the other word, you know, it's being censored. So, and then you see the things that, I mean, it's like, how is this real life? Like, what kind of matrix have I been put into where this is the timeline I'm on, sort of thing? Because you see the White House posting video game
AI generated slop, and I'm just
AI
like,
generated slop and
what?
And showing explosions. It's like people have lost their lives. A school full of children lost their lives. This is not a game. What are you doing? This is not just where you just struck some facility and nobody got hurt and you think you're winning. You know, this is pretty sick. You know, it's hard to stay away from that when you see those types of things. You're just like, you want to just spread the word or comment or something because you feel like amplifying those, you know, either comments or reposting can show why the heck is this happening? Why are they doing this? Just to kind of, I kind of like that. It's almost this immune system of people rising up, but it's taking time for people to fight back even with their voices.
Yes.
It's wild.
I mean, it's going to take time for us to adjust. I mean, I'm looking at some kids these days and I'm just like, this is not what kids do. Like, I should not be. So I'm kind of freaking out about that. Like, how are they going to grow up? Their brains are going to be wired so differently. I'm a little concerned there, but I mean, let alone the kids, just adults. I mean, so many people, it's messing with so many people. But like, here's the thing, it's funny, I derailed myself to get back to, but like the open web, I think, is going to help solve this problem. Because these big industries, these big monopolies that control these social media platforms, they're monetizing us. They're trying to get as much profit from us as they can. That is their incentive. That's baked into the corporate structure. That is not going to change. But what will change, what can fix things, is competition. And the competition is going to come from the open web. And I can talk about this for a while. Like, it's a much deeper discussion. My thesis is the open web is going to enable everybody to create their own Facebook, to create their own YouTube, to create their own Instagram page. Like, you fully own everything. You are uncensorable because it's my website. I own it. And these are the kinds of tools that, and I'll explain a little bit how is Bitcoin involved in this? Like, why can you do this without Bitcoin? It's true. Bitcoin is not necessary, except I think it helps us close the loop of the incentive structure that is broken right now. And I'll explain. So right now, how do these companies make money? They sell ads, right? The more engagement, the better. They can get more advertising revenue, more money. That is broken. That is the incentive that gets people addicted. And kind of one of the ways to mitigate that is changing that incentive structure. With Bitcoin, I mean, here's the beauty of it. Bitcoin solves multiple problems at the same time, and it creates better incentives. For example, do you understand proof of work? Mm-hmm. Like how it kind of, Bitcoin, it needs the proof of work in order to get mined. You know, some amount of energy has to be spent in order for the next block to be added to the Bitcoin blockchain. And the beautiful thing there is right now it's kind of centralized, which is not good. But the beautiful thing is it doesn't have to be. It can be decentralized. It can be distributed. Mm-hmm. And I actually made a website that kind of demonstrates this. It's called win3bitcoin.com. And it's called that because like the current block reward is rough. It's a little over 3 Bitcoin. And I made it dead simple. You go to the website, you click mine, and you have a chance to win 3 Bitcoin. Like it's astronomically challenging to mine it, like on a consumer laptop or computer, like GPU. But the point is it's possible to be distributed. You can do more applications in the Bitcoin mining space.
What?
It demonstrates. So, right. For example, like I'm very upfront about how unlikely it is to find the block. And I have stats on the page. And I just want to educate people on how unlikely it is. But there's going to be a good side to this because the good news is we can scale down these antminers. We can scale them down. People are coming up with these awesome new devices. Have you heard of the BitAxe?
Yes, I have a couple.
Oh my God, amazing stuff. I'm just like to give you some numbers. I mean, these are ballpark numbers. Like my laptop, like when I run it on the website and it's using my, I'll start with CPU. The CPU is super inefficient. It gets roughly less than 1 megahash per second. Mm-hmm. I implemented a GPU mode that my laptop gets roughly 50 megahashes per second. That's a 50x improvement.
Okay.
The BitAxe runs at like 510 watts. It's like almost nothing. Like it's a integrated circuit ASIC that is just burned into it is the SHA-256 algorithm. It's like, it's meant for Bitcoin hashing. That runs at roughly 1 terahash per second. So that is already like way faster than a GPU on our computers, which is fine. And then like the industrial grade hardware is hundreds of times more powerful than the BitAxe. It's on the hundreds of terahashes per second. I think some of them, they're getting close to the petahash per second, if not already.
Okay.
So, and then if we zoom out even more, I'm like, trying not to blow too many people.
No, go ahead. because it's like, it's nice to know the scale of these things.
Exactly. I love these numbers. And like on my website, there's a logarithmic scale. So you can see where you are relative to like the mining pools and like the different miners. And then like the network itself is on the order of exahashes. I think we're touching roughly a zeta hash.
I heard that we were approaching the zeta hash and I thought we reached it, but I don't know if now.
Yes. We're oscillating like around it.
Okay.
It's going up and down. And so like, yeah, it's amazing the power of the Bitcoin network. And like my point with this website is to show people we need to scale this technology down. We need these chips in every laptop and every phone. And here's the reason why. Like at first you're probably like, Peter, that's crazy. Why would I ever mine on my phone or laptop? Here's why. The open web. The beautiful thing about proof of work is that it can be used as an anti-spam mechanism. All this problem with bots, fake profiles, and AI will literally be not destroyed. It'll be drastically mitigated if these platforms require a little bit of proof of work in order to take impactful actions. Creating a profile should not be free. Making a tweet should not be free. Like all these things, and I'm not saying it should be expensive either. Like the interesting thing is we have to figure out the equilibrium spot. What is the sweet spot of, I don't want to delay somebody from being able to upload a photo or video. Like we want that to still be fast, but we want to raise the floor of the computation required in order for a million spam emails to not go through the internet every second. Like,
I love that. Yes.
That is so broken. Like one of my ideas is like, I have too many ideas.
I love the ideas. This is great.
It's so amazing. It's underutilized. Like Jack Dorsey, please invent these. Please make these popular. Like we need an email protocol that requires a little bit of proof of work. Mm-hmm. If you add a little requirement, hey, I'm not going to accept this email unless you mine however many terahashes. I'm just not even going to look at it because you haven't staked any energy to send it to me. You're probably a spammer if you don't want to stake a fraction of a penny to mine. Like it's.
So that's kind of how Club Orange works at the moment,
yeah.
Which I love because Yes. Yeah, we are creating events on Club Orange. You know, there is a paywall to join, which again reduces the amount of spam. You also have to send at least one sat, which again, sats aren't a lot, but it's some form of, you know, because you know that Bitcoin is finite, you know, it costs something. And eventually that something is going to be worth so much more. So it's something that normally when people want to save this Bitcoin for the future, you know that by even spending a sat or, you know, however much it is, you're spending something that needs proof of work in order to be created. So yes. There is, I have not had one spammer on Club Orange sending me a message, you know, never once. And I haven't heard other people having that issue. So it's a model that is working and it's creating, you know, a really great way for Bitcoiners to connect in real life because you're not afraid to go and meet these people knowing that they've put in some sort of stake by connecting with other people, that they are not just there to spam you. Because again, okay, yes. The random maybe person, but it's not going to be a million spammers and you're, you know, it really is a great model. I love Club Orange for that. And I would love to see that implemented in email and in all like the open web. I mean, it's just, so yes. Is the open web already a thing like with Noster and, you know, with Tor, like you know, Onion and things like that? Or
I mean, it's still developing. Mm-hmm. Like, it's funny, I just made a website that I think is a nice demonstration of the open web. It's called OpenLinks. So if you look that up online, it's basically a free, personal, decentralized link tree alternative.
Okay.
You can look at the code. You can add all your websites. It's free. Oh, you don't have to pay anything.
And I'm like, doing that. I'm doing it.
Yes. Thank you. And it's crazy. I mean, it's kind of weird. I looked up Linktree, how many employees they have. They have roughly 300 employees. I'm like, I made this app in like a few days and it looks better. Like when you look at the site, I got my profile pic. I got my follower counts on every profile. Like it looks like a really, not to toot my own horn, I think it's kind of a cool website.
Amazing. Yeah.
And I don't think Linktree has, I mean, they could add that.
I would rather support anything that is like something free to use that you developed. Look how quickly you developed that. And they have all these employees. So obviously you have to pay some sort of fee to support the network of people that are supporting this thing, you know, and how
yes,
it's amazing. So were you able to create that recently because of the tools you have available to you? And was it not as easy to do before?
Yes. I mean, that's exactly it. Like if I tried to do this a year ago, like it would not have taken me a few days. It would have taken me between a few weeks and a few months, probably a few weeks, but like, it's still like just in the past few months, it's hard to emphasize how much more powerful the AI models have become. And I'm telling this to everybody, like, I know like AI, everybody's sick of hearing AI. I am too. I'm sick of AI slop. It's terrible. Like so many articles are bullshit. I'm like, I wrote a few articles with my own words that I'm proud of. I'm like, I'm trying not to use AI. One of them I did, but the main point is to like help me gather sources, not to like produce the content. I already had the idea. I just needed a cleaner expression of it. Right. Anyways, so like this whole open web concept, like you can apply this to literally every platform. What if we had everybody who had their own Facebook page that they owned? It took two clicks of a button and now you have your own page uncensored. You set up your friends. You can see all your, like, these are brand new protocols we haven't developed yet. Like, I mean, some of them are probably touching upon it, like Mastodon, Primal, all these things. Like, but here's the thing that kind of closes the loop on the incentive structure. That same proof of work that's used as an anti-spam mechanism and like an authentication system that you are a person likely will be used to reward the users. Once you have the scale, once you have millions of users, you begin a flywheel effect of you start being able to literally mine blocks. And you will literally, part of the protocol that I am suggesting is part of the proof of work mechanism, you can specify, hey, here's your reward if you happen to find a block. You'll be rewarded whatever, one Bitcoin, however much. See, this is still like the design space. We don't know what the numbers should be.
Right.
We don't know, like, should we reward the whole platform, a million people? If one person finds a block, that would be cool. Should we reward the people who did more work than others? Probably. So it's like, all these are open design problems. It's such a fun thing to think about. And I'm like, this is the thing.
I'm trying to picture how, so if everyone is paying to use these platforms, like even a small, tiny amount of sats, then by just using their computing power,
like you don't have to pay any sats. Like the beauty is you just pay in your computation, like in say network like
power. Yeah.
In order to sign up, like you just need to add like whatever a gating, like it's like a CAPTCHA that instead of proving you're human, it proves that you want to stake a little bit of energy to secure the platform.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you combine that with all the millions and perhaps billions of people who will eventually join these platforms, it is going to cause some serious competition in the Bitcoin mining space.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a good thing. It's going to help decentralize everything, distribute the mining even more. The mining pools are going to go down. Like, at least the legacy ones, the ones who have big, crazy miners. Like, I don't know. I mean, I still think that's still useful, but...
Yeah, this is something that, again, you think could sound far down the road, but really technology moves exponentially and things can change very quickly. And, you know, we're at the point that we just hit the 20 millionth Bitcoin mined, mm-hmm. and we're hitting Zeta hash, you know, we're touching on Zeta hash, you know,
yes.
above and below it, you know, so we're at this point of massive change with AI and all these different systems. And it could happen, I don't know, in the next, how like, what's your estimate? I'm having my own estimates. Maybe in the next 5 years, we might see stuff like this.
This year. I'm already building.
I think
this
year.
I'm already built, like, half of the stuff I'm about to open source. I mean, I built the win3bitcoin.com, like, the other year. Like, that was one of my reasons for leaving Google.
Right.
I wanted to build this system, this open system. The problem was AI wasn't quite good enough back then.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had too many things going on, too many projects, so... But now I'm like way more focused, way more motivated, and I'm excited for what people are going to build. And one thing I want to also comment on, this was technically attempted way back in 2017, 2018 timeframe. There was a company called CoinHive. Have you heard of them? They attempted this CAPTCHA-based proof-of-work system, or this proof-of-work-based CAPTCHA system. They did not succeed. And I think, I mean, I have my own opinions on that, but like in my mind, this new protocol needs to be very upfront, very transparent. It needs informed consent. You cannot mine without the user's consent. That mm-hmm. should be disallowed.
Mm-hmm.
The control should be on the user end, whereas all these old systems were on the website end, like the host end. The host controls, hey, you're going to spend this much. You're going to do that. No, that's wrong. The right way is my web browser, let's say Google Chrome, let's say I add an extension that says, I'm willing to mine 3,000, whatever, however many terahashes per 5 minutes or whatever, or per action. Mm-hmm. I'm willing to mine, or maybe you can convert it to like cents or electricity. Like, I'm willing to spend 3 cents, or like, you know, I'm willing to spend 0.1 cents per action on this website. Like, I don't want to spend more than that. And literally your client, it will enforce that. It'll be like, this website wanted you to mine more than you allowed, so we're not going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a beautiful back pressure. That gives more power to the people, because we can say, hey, I want to use this platform, but I think you're asking too much of me. I think you're asking me to mine too much.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to mine this much. Computer, laptop, whatever. Like, the power has to be on the client end, the person, the people who are going to the website. That's where the gate has to be. We cannot let these websites mandate, hey, you got to mine this much. You got to, like, because then they're just going to keep ratcheting it up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's more enshittification.
Well, this is just so amazing, because you told me that you worked for Meta for
yes
a long time. So you worked, I don't know for how long, but you worked there and you got to see the ins and outs and the incentives and how systems are not working. Like, is this part of your journey into why you're thinking of these types of ideas, or is it more Bitcoin related, or is it both, like a combination of both things?
No, that's a great point. I mean, yeah, I saw things at Meta that, you know, I mean, I'm hearing that there's stuff on the news right now. I think they literally just announced they're laying off 10% of their workforce today. They're planning. It's insane. And I'm just like, what are you doing? It's another short-sighted attempt at like spending money to buy more AI data centers that no one's going to use in a couple of years because it's all going to be open source and local. Like, that's another topic. And I'm just like, this bubble is going to be freaking hilarious when it explodes.
Jeez.
And it's a rabbit hole. Like, I have opinions there. Obviously, I lean more towards the open free models, the open free solutions. There's no way to stop it. Like, once it's out there, you can download it. People are going to torrent it. You can't prevent people from using the free open models. I mean, it's ironic. I think China is, they're doing like a soft warfare on us by releasing these free models, because I mean, the claim is, I mean, allegedly, like they're training on these models via tokens. Like they just have an application that just like, it asked a million questions to Anthropic, say like Opus. And from all those answers, they can use that to train their own model that's almost as good. It has learned the same way that Opus has, just at a fraction of the cost, which, I mean, yeah, it's kind of wrong. So I don't know, like it's a gray area. Like that is like a violation of their service, but it's still good. Like even if the Chinese did not release all these free open source models, like American companies are still, we're like Google released Gemma, like OpenAI has theirs. Everybody's releasing free open weight models. They're just not at the frontier level. Mm-hmm. They're like a year behind or 6 months behind. But I'm like, if this trend keeps going in a couple months or a year, like the free models are going to be amazing. They're going to be the same thing that allowed me to build open links in a couple days.
Right.
What happens when everybody has that for free? Like the world is going to freaking change.
It is like a soft war on that. That's amazing. And how do you feel for people that don't understand maybe the Bitcoin being the, because of the Bitcoin mining, because of providing the energy and a stake in that network and for the open web, and even the idea of the sats, you know, sending, you know, having some, I don't know if that was specifically part of it, but what's the difference between Bitcoin and crypto when it comes to that?
That's a great question. I mean, crypto, it's funny. There's so many schools of thought on this. I love Bitcoin. Bitcoin is number one, obviously, but I like that people are trying to compete with it and we're learning really good lessons based on that competition. For example, smart contracts. Like you could argue, would we even have like a Lightning network if people hadn't built the basis of like Ethereum or whatever? They showed us, hey, you can build a decentralized computer. Like that is a great pattern to mimic. Like I love that people are trying to compete with Bitcoin because we're learning a lot from that competition. We're learning what works. We're learning what doesn't. Some things are going to stick. Some things are not. I mean, in terms of like coinage, like 99% of it are scams. Like they're not going to go anywhere. Like, yeah. I'm sorry to say, like I fell for it years ago. I'm just like, oh my God, like these coins have amazing properties. They're going to be big. But like when you take a step back and now you look at like Bitcoin and like this thing is building the foundation of all these, like literally every coin is paired with Bitcoin. You cannot, like I dare you to find me an exchange that your coin isn't paired with Bitcoin. Like you cannot move away from that. Like it's like the anchor to cryptocurrency, the crypto world. So
plus the censorship resistance and the immutability portion of it,
mm-hmm.
is right. Just so different, you know. And
yes,
it's like that idea, like you said, everything that like things that were started on Ethereum, the smart contracts wouldn't have been able to be implemented in Lightning, you said,
as right.
far as Lightning goes.
What? Yeah, go ahead.
So it's just the idea that people try things out on other networks, and then eventually it's built on the network that has the most value and is the censorship resistant and immutable layer. And that's why I think of it like, you know, a playground. Like you're playing around with all these other chains and all these other coins, and then you grow up and then you get Bitcoin. Kind of like once you're an adult, you know, you can,
you gotta, you know, learn some lessons, stop playing with those shit coins, you know. Yeah. it's a hard lesson. Mm-hmm. I mean, people are holding bags.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm still holding bags. I don't know. I'm hoping stuff comes back.
Yeah.
It's a hard pill to swallow. It's a really hard pill to swallow. But mm-hmm. I mean, I'm basically, you know, I'm pretty much all in on Bitcoin. Like that is the future. I think this is the system that is serving as the model of how all these things are going to work. And the funny thing is we haven't even fully utilized the power of Bitcoin with the open web and proof of work I mentioned. I'm like, where are the apps? Why is nobody building this? This was attempted years ago. It kind of petered out, but like, we got to do it again. We got to keep doing it. And it's going to create.
Have you been on other? I'm sorry. It's going to create what?
No. Just like it's going to create a virtuous cycle of like the more we move in that direction, where it's just going to decentralize everything. It's going to fix everything. And like we need more of this.
Yeah. I want to know if you've been on other podcasts before.
This is my first.
That's amazing. So somebody like you with the ideas that you're having and that we met through.
We met through Club Orange, I want to say.
Yes.
The Chicago, I love that app. Like we're meeting so many cool people. I'm meeting so many awesome people. They have such a cool system. I'm speaking with the creator of it. Like mm-hmm. it's so freaking cool. And like,
that's amazing. Yeah. Mateo's incredible. The creator, the model that he has and the ideas that you're having coming forward, building. And we met through that specific application through Club Orange. Mm-hmm. And that is something that now that you're out speaking about this, you know, you just never know the next, you know, the people that you will influence with your voice, you know, so coming out here and sharing, you've been busy building, you've been busy thinking, you've been busy with your history of your employment and working for Meta and all those things. But that leads you to now the place that you are. And now this being your first podcast, and it's amazing to see how many more people you'll speak with after this and how it can inspire other people to do what you're doing and to build that world that we want to see. Where are all those applications?
Yes. Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm just like, I'm super excited. Like, I know the world is, you turn on the news, it's going to shit right now. It's kind of true. But like, you take a step back, I think we're on the precipice of like a new revolution. Like, this is the inkling of it. Like, this is the start of the singularity, basically. That's a whole nother topic.
But like, I would love to hear all about that too. But yeah, we could have more episodes. This has been amazing. But I just can't get over how just this open web idea is just blowing my mind right now. Like, there's so much you can talk about when it comes to that. And I definitely want to check out this. So you said it's win3bitcoin.com. And then you said OpenLinks is your Linktree alternative. And then Do you have something that you could share as far as the open web information that you're building so we can link any of that in the episode?
Well, funny you mentioned that. I just made another website called freetheworld.ai. I literally just made it a few days ago. I'm like, this is a cool concept. I'm just going to build it. And I did.
What is it?
It's so exciting. It basically explains how the world is going to go free. We're taking the world back and the billionaires are going to go down. We're demonetizing the billionaires by making everything free. We're going to become a hyper deflation world. Jeff Booth is right. Technology makes everything free or cheap. And that's what I'm super excited for. Like, the website is basically a catalog of how all companies are disruptible.
It
uses AI to analyze and rate how disruptible all these companies are. It gives them a score. It explains how much capital is probably going to be freed up when the market dumps on them. Like, the market is going to crash.
I love this.
It's hilarious. Right. And the beautiful thing is, if people complain, they're like, Peter, you're going to make the market crash. I'm like, what is the point of companies when everything's free? What is the point of a job when everything's free?
And then it makes people realize, because they're like, oh no, this is going to crash our stock market. And all
right.
Well, then you'll realize that it's been fake this whole time.
It's been fake. It's been inflated. You don't need a retirement. You don't need a 401k anymore when everything is free. Like,
and labor increasing, everything being taken away from the monopolies and the people that control and make money off of everything.
Yes. I mean, granted, I don't think companies are going away necessarily. I think they need to restructure.
Mm-hmm.
They need, like, here's the funny thing. Like, I think what Jack attempted was half correct. Mm-hmm. I think you took those 4,000 people off of whatever projects they were on. The right thing to do is take those 4,000 and make them work on brand new projects, or spread your reach, localize in all languages, improve all your products 10x. Like, that is the way to make a good company.
Yeah.
Not just cutting headcount. Like, that's fucked up.
I wonder if they're cutting headcount because just the way the economy's been, and it's been so hard on companies that I think they're cutting that because they need to, maybe. But it would be nice if they could keep more of them and not cut so many. You know what I mean? Just like, instead of cutting back that much, actually build more instead of just automating and just getting rid of so much of the human layer and the creativity.
Correct. I mean, you need people to guide the creation of things. I mean, one day, I don't know when, I mean, like, I'm touching on the singularity now. Now is like, there's another topic where it's like, what happens when people are just irrelevant? Like, what happens when people are the bottleneck between new companies and new product, new services? Like, well, this is also why I'm afraid of Elon Musk's robots.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we need to not let him do that, kind of. Like,
yeah,
I get the intention. He wants to like automate every human labor, but like, the first damn thing he's going to do is get defense contracts. And like, they're going to deploy these things. And I'm like, that cannot happen. Like, we need to literally shut down the Model S and the Model X lines to accelerate this. And I'm like, are you fucking crazy? Like,
oh, no.
we can't let this happen.
We need to decentralize everything before the billionaires can make those robots.
Exactly. Exactly.
This, like, needs to happen faster.
Yes.
Before those get defense contracts. Let's do it. So yeah, we need to get this, like, again, that's the scary part, because then the people with the most money and the most influence can do whatever they choose, and they're able to. I mean, it's crazy because these companies already have to do with NASA, and you know, it's just, there's too much. Like, Starlink is going on, Neuralink is happening, you know, all these different things that he is building, which sounds great, but when things are centralized, centralization is scary.
Yes.
Bitcoin is decentralized, and everything you are talking about is decentralized. It's spreading out the power for all people. And I think that is definitely the way forward in the future. And I definitely need to have you back on the show, because we can talk about, I need to get some updates, first of all, because who knows how much will change in the next 4 or 5 months. Yep. And yeah, I can't wait to see that people will, you know, be inspired by you and contact you, reach out to you, you know, actually do some of these things on their own. I even have somebody who I would like to connect you with who's doing some interesting, you know, open sourcing when it comes to Bitcoin.
Okay.
And I would like to maybe see what your thoughts are and how you guys can maybe, you know, share ideas and stuff like that. So, yeah. So thank you so much for joining me today. I feel like this was even too short, but I do have another episode after this. I'm really excited to talk more about what you are building, what you have built, and more of your ideas. I mean, this is the kind of thing that you worked for Meta and now you don't. And look at the kind of, you know, the kind of creativity that's coming from somebody like you. And now you're choosing to spend your time more and more in the Bitcoin world, which is amazing.
Thank you so much, Stacey. It was awesome speaking with you. I definitely want to keep chatting. We can talk for hours and hours, and there's so much to talk about. I'm excited.
Yes. I'm looking forward to having you back for sure. I mean, keep building so you can share more of your discoveries. 3 websites already you have that I know of. You know, I don't know what else you haven't told me, but.
Thank you, Stacey. I appreciate it. It was really nice talking with you.
Nice talking to you too. Have a great rest of your day.
You too.
Bye. Take care.